Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Kate Laity, and today I will be chatting with graphic artist S.L. Johnson, who creates both fine art images using like wood and linoleum block prints, and graphic design for clients, including posters and t-shirts and a wide variety of merchandise. And we'll be chatting about, you know, the usual sort of things, the creative life and finding the sweet spot between pleasing clients and pleasing yourself.
All right. Well, I'm talking to am I on?
Yeah. Oh,
so sorry.
I'm still introducing you.
I'm sorry, there was a glitch.
And she also designed the Speakeasy's own Trixie Sneer, who you'll see on our Facebook page, of course, on our Blog Talk Radio page. So welcome, Stephanie, from the Jezebel Lounge.
I am live from the Jezebel Lounge, and it's a little quiet this morning. Everybody's sort of sleeping off the fun from last night. So, yeah, everybody's stepping over the bodies as I'm pacing and talking.
The Saturday nights at the Jezebel Lounge, very legendary.
Oh, yes, but very much on the down low. You know, it's you know, you need to know the password to come in. You know how we roll here. You know, you've been a frequent guest when it was the Aloha Kahula. So,
yes, I remember fondly the days of the Aloha Kahula, which was,
and you gave it its name. You had the best name out of the 400 I had to read aloud. Yes,
the finest tiki bar in the Northeast.
Hell yeah,
for a
and
time.
In Willimantic.
And like all cool things, it doesn't last forever.
No. Well, it just, we had no more wall space. That's kind of what happened. We had no more room to put anything up, and we couldn't have somebody walk in and see it the same way twice, so I had to go. And now it's a Jezebel Lounge. So
there's a great deal of pressure in keeping a space like that active.
Oh, God, yeah.
It seems to be.
Plus, hoarding.
Hoarding,
it's like all the
cheeky
things.
But it's hoarding on a manageable basis. It's only for as long as you're interested in that project, and when the project is done, it's like you're happy to let it all go.
Absolutely. That's the best part of it. Like, don't want it, it's off somewhere else now, reconstituted in a different way, and that's awesome. So
it is. It's recycling.
Yes. It's visual recycling. I like it.
But, I mean, it's kind of interesting, too, because it's the same way with, like, creative projects, too, where it's like you get obsessed with something for a while and use everything that possibly comes your way that connects to it. And then when you're done with it, it's like, no, I'm on something new now. None of that matters. Well, sometimes it comes
back.
Well,
a lot of times it's the connection, too. If I'm working on two or three things, one, you know, I can tell just from either colors used or a way, you know, lines are made, that, mm-hmm. let's say, three projects in a row informed each other because I found something new or I found something different or something a little more exciting and inspiring. And then I continued it on through a couple of projects that are being done at the same time. So I get to it's kind of cool because I get to explore this in a short way and then revisit it later if I want to or just let that go as well.
It's always cool to sort of hear those things because, I mean, we work in such different ways because I work, you know, words and you work with images and colors and shapes and things mm-hmm. like that. But it's interesting how some of the aspects of creativity are the same.
Well, very much so. I mean, personally, I'm very much inspired by the written word. Your written words help a lot because for some reason you put a sentence down on Facebook and I got like 75 pictures going on. The same with the Speakeasy. All these women are posting these awesome things. I was like, oh, my God, my head's on fire. I have all these pictures. You know, Trixie Sneer showed up out of nowhere. Roz Ruffhauser showed up out of nowhere.
So
they're
cool.
All bitching about something, you know. But
Roz Ruffhauser.
Yeah, they're exactly the same. And if you notice, she has Trixie's mouth as well. So you know what I mean about recycling things. But I was like, oh, we need another sneery chick. That's all. She has to have a sneer as well. That's the only way this is going to work. but that's the cool thing. It's like the more creative people I know in different areas, the more inspiring it is to me anyway. So
absolutely.
And I hope I inspire other people.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I'm thinking that I've got a bunch of the note cards with Roz Ruffhauser on them, and they're sitting on the corner of my desk because it's like going, I know this will get me in the mind for one of the projects I need to work on. So she's like going,
oh, cool.
Glaring at me saying, get to work on it.
With her crown of brass muscles.
Or else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's nice because it's a really feisty sort of image, and it's really kind of fitting like things that are going on right now, where a lot of women are like, okay, we've had enough. There's no more of this. We're tired
well,
of all
big
this
in
kind
the political
of
arena. Yeah, I know. It's sort of like, you know, all of that kind of goes in, you know, with the thoughts when you create anything. It's like whatever it is at the moment, you pick up on things, or just pick up on whatever you're interested in, and boom, it comes out some bizarre way. So
yeah,
I always find the process bizarre.
You can kind of know all the things that were poured into a particular project, and it's like, okay, nobody else can see these, but I can see them there. And it's like you just had to know. So have you always identified as an artist?
No,
or was
and
there
I
like
don't
a time
think I do
where
now.
You sort of claimed, what's that?
No, I don't really. I don't like the word. I have a hard time identifying with it because I don't think it has a meaning, which may just really not sit well with some people. But, you know, it's sort of like, to me, in my head, it's like people say, oh, you're an artist, and they just slap all these labels and assumptions onto you.
Yeah.
So I guess I am. I just don't really claim it for myself. I mean, I don't like to refer to myself as an artist. I think it sounds really pretentious. But I guess that's what I do. So there's no other word I can use. So I'm like, sure, okay, that's a good one. That works. It's short. People remember it. They have their assumptions. What am I supposed to say? I don't know. I'm not good with this. So
I'm an artist, but it mostly appear in green letters and with a full stop page. I am artist.
And I will. Unironically or anything, call somebody else an artist and mean it in the very best way. I just have a hard time saying it about myself because I don't consider myself an artist for a billion reasons. So, you know, but that's subjective. So, you know, it's how you feel about what you do. I just take pictures from stuff that occurs to me. Is that art? Okay, fine, I'm an artist. It's good.
It's hard because, I mean, if you inflate it too much, then it becomes this sort of pressure from the label, too, that you don't really necessarily want to put on yourself. Or it's like, I just make stuff up.
pretty much. Like, I had an idea. Here it is on paper. There you go. Art. I don't know.
Yeah, just some art for you.
Yeah, I just whipped this out of my armpit. There you go. Have some art. Trying to keep it clean.
Well, I think that's part of what really sort of fascinates me with visual artists, where it's like you can do this thing that seems so quick and it's suddenly there and perfect, and you're like, oh my God, I wish I could do that, and I can't. I mean, I really like, I can sort of see things and sort of describe them, and but I can't make them. And it's
the same way about
really
writing, Kate. I feel the same way about writing. It's like, how can I take all these pictures in my head and put them into words? Because it's so easy when other people do it, right?
That's why we always envy the things we can't do.
Exactly.
I mean, which is not a bad thing. I mean, what kind of art inspires you?
What kind of inspires
art or
me?
Art? Yeah, I mean,
well, all the arts,
are there
do,
arts
all the arts do, in general. I mean, I love, you know, this music I love that just totally juices me up to create something. There are books and authors I love to read that juice me up to do, you know, to do something. Dance, theater, movies. There is so much out there. If you're talking visual art, I love, you know, I love like classic Saul Bass design. I love prehistoric art, Art Nouveau, considering my stuff is not as fancy and decorative as that. I love Art Nouveau, Art Deco. Very designed things, you know, like those really fabulous book covers, those Penguin classic covers. A lot of design that communicates, you know, I mean, all design communicates, but I really love good communication and design. That really is wonderful. But now I'm looking at a calendar made from the wife of somebody who's a friend of mine who lives in Norway, and which is like so removed. And it's this beautiful, stark, basic shapes, and that just so appeals to me. But then right above it, I have some beautiful Japanese woodcut prints that I love just as much and inspire me as well. You know, it's sort of like I don't try to imitate these things, but they all go into that cauldron in your head. They get all mixed around and they get translated. So I can look at these. I can go watch a movie and then listen to a song, and all of that will inform the next thing I do. You know, I'm sorry these are not very specific answers, but that's just how it works. I don't have a process. Because I'm sure you're going to try to ask me about that again, and I don't think I have a process, but I think it's the idea that you look at everything. I go for a walk in the woods, hear a piece of music, look at a piece of art. It's all in there.
But that is the process.
It is, and it's all about observing, you know, observing and then taking and being open to the experiences. You know, I'm sure this is going to translate into some interesting artwork. This little radio interview.
Flint and steel. Always flint and steel.
But I mean, when you get, I guess when I'm thinking about process, when you get something, say, I don't know, a book cover design. How do you start on the project?
Oh, well, I first start by panicking a lot. Panic is really, really awesome.
Panic is
and stressing.
A good motivator.
Yeah, panic and stress, immediately, panic and stress. Oh, I have 4 months to do this? Good, because I'll just procrastinate, wait for, you know, 2 weeks before it's due and then get it done. But that's part of the process. A lot of people's process, I'm coming to find out, actually. But what I do is I try to, okay, let's say it's a book cover. I don't really want to read the book first, because I'm just going to be interpreting, in my mind, the story my way, and I really want to do something that does the author a service. You know, I want to do this for the author to illustrate the cover of their book in a way they would like that will make them happy and speaks to what they've written. So I usually ask for the elevator pitch. And then I come up with something that's absolutely horrible. And I spend a lot of time coming up on the really, really awful design, like all the time I have to do this on the terrible, terrible. And then I go back and look and go, what the hell was I thinking? Oh, my God, this is such a better idea. And then I do the good idea in 2 hours. That's my process every bloody time. Every bloody time. If you saw for White Rabbit, your story, White Rabbit, and I like the cover I did for that, and I love the story as well. If you saw the first 4 designs, you would be like, why did I even ask her to do this? They're so bad, and I keep them as a lesson. You know, I keep
Looks
them. Like, yeah, that's sort of a crappy design. Yeah, well, let's not go there. There was some stuff going on that was a little too close to that. Literal, very literal. And then I just sort of meditated on it a little bit. So, yeah. that's kind of my process, really.
But I have to say that, like, the cover for White Rabbit is fantastic because it conveys a sense of the book that doesn't come through, I think, if you gave sort of just a regular sort of blurb, or if you'd read it and said, oh, I have to focus more on sort of the noir elements or something like that. It's got this wonderful elegance, and it's also, since there may be other books related to it, it's also something that can be varied in future.
So are you saying there's more books that I have to do covers for?
possibly. It's like,
well,
you know, I have 10 billion things going on, so who knows?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but
it's awesome.
It's simple, yet it's elegant, but it also conveys a sense of the mystery. And I guess I see it as sort of kind of Art Deco. Have I got the right period? Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The colors and everything. And actually, the colors were inspired by the Jezebel Lounge, which has sort of a deco-y palette to it, even though it's the actual decoration isn't too deco-y. But that came out at the same time that I was doing colors for the Jezebel Lounge. Although none of those colors are actually in there.
But I mean, it's the idea that it's more, it's not slavishly accurate to a particular aesthetic. It's like, what do I want in this space? Even if it's inspired by sort of this particular period, it gives you the freedom to say, but I want this. This works here. This sort of fits. And
well,
I guess
what I was trying to say, well, first of all, my thing is that there's a lot of samey stuff out there, and I try not to do something that looks a lot like other stuff, if I can. I mean, obviously, sometimes you do it, and it happens, and that's part of taking in all that information. So there's that. I really believe that we deserve to look at better design, and I'm not saying that I'm fabulous or wonderful, but I just like to produce things that are a bit different.
You are.
And it also, I felt, would draw people in, and it had some action to it while being very decorative. Because when I had read the story, and that was actually the case when I read the story before I did the design, which really, really was not a good idea. But I realized after I was trying to put all these elements into it, there was just this wonderful sense of action in the story. And I felt the lines really conveyed that. And the two rabbits almost looked like it was spinning, but in a way that's not. You know, so all that consideration. I mean, if you really want to hear the boring crap, that's kind of what that is. But it's like basically trying to distill it down to something somebody would want to pick up. It looks nice. I love the matte cover, too, instead of glossy, and had action implied because I felt that the story is very active. So that's kind of how that works, you know? That's why I like to work from
And I like that there's a kind of, it's almost like a mirror image, too. So it gets a sense of sort of the two realities operating within it as well.
Exactly. You got it.
Is there a particular skill set involved in working with commercial art? I mean, what kind of challenges do you face when you're doing work not just like as a kind of self-expression, but you're doing it for a particular client?
Well, sure. First of all, I have to use this thing called diplomacy, which is a tough one for me. I'm still working on my 2.0 version of that. It's like, no, you're insane. That's not going to work. Doesn't really convey a good client, you know, sort of relationship. No, well, I've learned some things. I've learned things like don't show people half-finished work. But also, you realize that people are asking you to do it because they can't communicate what they want to communicate. You know, you want to have something that's going to draw the eye. That's the whole point. It's going to brand somebody. So you want something that's true to them and what they'll like and want to use. So it's basically conversations. I mean, you have conversations. You have to realize the person asking you to do it may not be a visual artist, usually isn't, and doesn't know how to put things together. So, you know, you come up with a whole bunch of things and then you talk about it. I mean, one client, and I don't really want to say names, but I had done what I thought was a fabulous logo, and then they wanted a friendlier skull. And I'm like, well, what? Come on. I'm like, yeah, a friendly winking skull? I'm like, come on, really? You know, I think it's one of those things you're thinking, okay, well, I guess I wasn't really getting that kind of vibe off of it, but, you know, I replaced what I had with that, and it worked, and they were happy. End of the story. So sometimes,
the
you know, those conversations are good to have because you can be way off. So, what I like to do is just leave the conversation open and have them just tell me, you know, another elevator pitch. What is it that your company is about, or what is it that you want to convey? That sort of thing.
Which
you know,
is,
and then I just go from there.
Well, and I think that's very wise. And another reason that I would remind, but
I'm sorry, I missed that last bit.
Well, just saying it's highlighting the importance of the elevator pitch, which I know writers are told to work on. And people are like, oh, well, you know, I hate boiling down my complicated story. It's like, you have to do it. If you want to interest people in what you're doing, you have to have a short version to lure them into a longer version. But
exactly.
I mean,
and you want the feeling. You know, the actual
feeling.
It's like, what is the author feeling about their story? You know, what is it that you're conveying? That's so important, you know. It really is.
And
you know,
to convey it in an instant the way that a really good design will do. I mean, I'm of course sitting in my office and staring straight ahead at both the triple Chesty Flame covers, but also the weird noir skull, which I think gets across in an instant everything that collection's about, because there's this very crazy skull that's clearly not a human shape, and then the dead body with the blood on it in one of the eyes, and the great lettering too. But I mean, you know exactly what that anthology is about, and it conveys it so perfectly.
That's awesome, because I actually kind of like that one, and that was actually a piece that is actually what the original looked like. That was exactly what I started with and exactly what I ended up with, which rarely ever happens. Roz Ruffhauser, that was another one. It was like, boom, picture. It came out the way it should have. End of the story. You know, sometimes you have to know when to stop massaging a design, and then you're just making it crappier and like, oh, no, go back to the beginning. Okay, that's where it should be, end of the story. You know, I want something simple and something that would, I think it's a successful cover, the Weird Noir one. So I'm glad that you like it.
Well, all of the noir covers are so good. I mean, our latest one with Lola, the Drag Noir cover, is just so striking, and it's so perfect.
Honestly, that's my least favorite of the three.
Is it Fluffy Jack?
No, Weird Noir. Yes. That's because I'm working with authors, and you guys are all wordy people. So I end up getting wordy stuff. And I'm like, yeah, Fluffy Chuck. I don't know. That just popped into my head and it went out. So, yeah.
That's Fairy Clown for our cover of Noir Carnival. But again, I mean, it conveys quickly what's in the story, the stories, and a really good sense of it, too. Which, I mean, ideally it should always do, but it's hard because, as you're saying, revision is a difficulty. It's the same thing with writing. When do you stop? When do you stop?
Right.
When you still haven't ruined it. And that's
exactly.
I was thinking about the drawbacks of working sort of for clients, but is it good for the creative process to have some restrictions on it?
Oh, yeah. You put restrictions on all creative process. I mean, in a way, otherwise you just end up with a mess. I mean, when I'm doing a print, let's say I'm doing a block print, I mean, yeah, I want all the things on it. And then realistically, you're thinking, well, you know, do I want to spend the rest of my life carving every single block to this one print? And is this going to be successful? And you edit constantly. I mean, my style is very simple, but even if I were to do very complicated, you know, line drawings, I mean, and I've done that sort of thing, you still have to work within a restriction because you just can't put all the stuff. I mean, you don't put all the words into your books, you know. You don't put 47 other unrelated storylines into a book. Well, it's the same thing with visual art, you know. Well, I mean, you could, but I wouldn't read it. But it's the same thing. I mean, at some point, you have to frame it. You know, it's a story. Whether, you know, a picture is a story, it's still communicating. And you kind of have to, you know, okay, I'm communicating this. This is what I want to communicate with this particular image. And whether it's for commercial art or your own stuff, it's still a mode of communication and a story you're trying to get across. Does that make any sense?
Oh, absolutely. And
you know, I feel like I'm babbling.
This made me think of... No. And this made me think of, you've been doing designs for Marco's Punk Rock Jukebox for 20 years, which is kind of scary.
Yes,
How do you keep something? Oh, you're just a BB. But how do you keep a project like that fresh and going and changing for that long of time?
Oh God, I have no idea. Well, you know, there are some things that are, you know, I've done the parody thing, you know, the Godfather poster thing, the Jaws one, which I think was maybe a little too subtle. And then the sex cover, you know, it's the parody with the punk rock guy, you know, that speaks to old school, DIY punk rock aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
I do know that year after year after year, there was no end to Marco and I arguing about the design. and me being unhappy with the printed version anyway, but, I don't know. It's, once again, I go, sometimes that becomes such a complicated, convoluted project. And then somebody will say to me, oh, maybe sometime you should, actually Joey's own this time drove the new thing. I did this really weirdly complicated art gallery looking thing with different covers. And I'm like, you know, it's not really working. He goes, this would look really good if you put it on sort of a faded record thing. And I'm like, that's brilliant. I'm taking your idea and I'm slapping it on the T-shirt because that's way better than mine. So sometimes it's good to talk to other artists. Because I was struggling with this year's shirt. I had no idea what, I'm like, 20 years, what the hell are we going to do? And I'm like, this is so complicated. It's not working. You know, it's just not working. And I'm like, oh, that's a way better idea. So I took some photographs of album covers I had that were really worn, and then I just massaged them, you know, through technology, wonders of technology, and stuck the punk rock guy on there. So, and then I was very happy with it.
I can't wait to get mine.
Well, I'm not thrilled with the printed version, to be honest with you. So
you never are, though.
Well, yeah. But then if I was always happy with what I did, I wouldn't try harder. So there's that. Overachievers Anonymous.
Is that a motivating factor?
What?
What's that?
I said, I didn't hear what you said.
I said, so is that what keeps you going, always being disappointed in the final outcome?
No. That would be depressing and horrible. I don't know, because it's just a compulsion. You know, it's like I have these things in my head. I put them out there, and they're useful to people, or I like them, and they're useful to me. And, what is your compulsion to write? It's you have things you can't explain
out of my
that.
Head at a great rate.
You know, it's not something exactly that you can really explain. It's just
no.
I can do it. If I can do work for people and it makes them happy and it does something, that's great too. It's very satisfying on many levels, but I have a hard time really pinpointing why I do it. You know, I feel like it's part of me and that's why I do it.
Well, I mean, I always come back to this thing of like, I think it's human nature to want to create stuff, and I think too many people get it sort of squeezed out of them at an early age, which
mm-hmm.
is probably terrible, I think. But the pressures are always against doing that kind of thing or spending your time in that way. I mean, how do you face that challenge of juggling your time for all these competing efforts?
Oh, yeah, especially with all the time I waste
for getting to make a living. And
well, okay,
what's that?
So I work full-time. I do work full-time. And then I do this on the side, and I'm fortunate to work towards the afternoon and evenings, which is good because my brain is a lot juicier for creative stuff in the morning. So, you know, I carve out some time. I try not to overdo it. I've done that on projects where I was just working constantly. And that's not a healthy or good thing, because then you're not leaving yourself any time to absorb all everything around you that helps feed the creativity. So, it's just you carve out time when you have it. I mean, Friday, for instance, I was just tapped out from some other things I was working on, and I just took a day off. It's like, not today. Because I know what happens when you push it, then nothing good comes out of it. So you just find the time. If you want to do it, you find the time. That's basically what it
yeah.
comes down to. It's like anything else, you know?
If it's a priority, you'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if that answered the question, but... well, yeah,
well,
that's it. You have to schedule yourself.
That's the bottom
line. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so you do that as well. I know that you like to write in the morning or journal in the morning or do something writey and pencil-y in the morning. And, you know, it's the same way. You know, I go out for a walk, come back, do some work, and it works out that way. That way you're always fresh, too. You know, you're not, like, spending hours and hours and hours on something that's just so soul-sucking. It's not even funny. So.
Well, and I mean,
like somebody's playing oboe in the background. I have like this weird little sound. I'm like, oh, we have music. That's not music.
But it's often the best thing when you're really stuck on something is just stop and step away
mm-hmm.
from it. And I think sometimes it's hard to, especially if you have a deadline. I mean, it's hard to
mm-hmm.
step away from that. But you really need to do that.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we're, oh, sorry. I thought you were...
No, I just said absolutely. That's it. That was my brilliant phrase for the day.
We're just about out of time for our live recording. So I want to
say
thank you.
Well,
thank you
you
very much.
See
how fast that went by?
I did, and thanks for kicking me in the butt. And I heard a friend of yours who I cannot believe isn't refusing to do this, since I am like the last person in the world who likes to do these things. Is it Brazil? The writer?
Huh. Yeah, we were supposed to do a radio show together, and he got cold feet, I think. So I'll have to see if I can
I think I'm
twist
challenging
his arm a little
him
more.
To do this. Yeah, I think I'm challenging him. I may trip this on Twitter.
Well,
I see a challenge.
Well, I want to make sure to mention sljohnsonimages.com, and she also has a shop, which is, that's Cafe Press, but you can link to it from her website, and be sure to drop by Speakeasy Radio on Facebook and give us a like, and listen to all our other fine episodes. Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate. This is fun. And I'm going to go and listen to this.
See, and now we'll have you to do it again.
Oh, great.
All right.
Thank you so very much.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.